Pat, will you verify that we have a quorum? We do have a quorum, and just a reminder, fill out the attendance sheet and leave it on your chair. And our thanks to Farrell, who will collect them at the end of the meeting. And if you want to make a comment or ask a question, we really appreciate it if you use the microphone. Thanks.
And we tried a new configuration today, which I think is a good one, so. All right, can I have a motion to adopt the agenda, please?
Vaughn, move to adopt the agenda.
Okay, motion by Vaughn, second?
Burke.
Second by Burke. Okay, all in favor? Any opposed? All right, and now can I have a motion to approve the September 13th, 2023 minutes? Those are found on pages 3 to 5 of the packet.
Motion to approve the minutes, Stoker.
Okay, motion Stoker, second. All right, thank you. All in favor? Any opposed? Great. Have we received any timely requests for public comment?
No public comment today.
Okay, thank you. Well, in that case, we have a couple of presentations, so I'm going to be fairly brief with my comments. But I do want to say that we are continuing to move forward with the strategies that were proposed in the budget planning work report from 2022-23. Yesterday, Interim Executive Vice President and Provost Elish Piper and VP for Admin and Finance CFO George Middlemiss addressed the chairs and directors groups that meet, group that meets monthly on Tuesday morning, with some background describing progress that had been done behind the scenes and ways that people can help support our efforts, and a slightly abbreviated, I imagine, version of that presentation is slated to come to this group, to Faculty Senate, to the Academic Leadership Council in the upcoming weeks. I might be missing a couple of shared governance or shared leadership groups, but stay tuned for that. What I thought I would focus my comments around budget and planning today is, in addition to that good work that's going on at the university level behind the scenes, we are doing a lot of work to advocate for our university and, in fact, for all public higher ed in Springfield and with legislators. We have had one or two legislators per week visiting our campus. We've been having very frank conversations with them about the needs of the university and our students and the importance of continuing to invest in higher ed in our state. And we have coming up on October 17th, what is an annual event for the administration. We meet with members of the Illinois Board of Higher Education, their staff, and we present the budget scenarios that we would like to see funded for the coming year. And we talk about all of the work that's being done on our campus that aligns with Thriving Illinois, the strategic plan for the state of Illinois. We talk about enrollment, we talk about equity, and this year we're talking a little bit more about community engagement and workforce development, because they're moving their emphasis from pillar one and pillar two to pillar three of the IDHE plan, which has that piece about partnerships with the private sector, workforce development, et cetera. We have a lot of really good things to talk about. I'm actually very much looking forward to that meeting. We will make a strong case for that. I also want to update people on what's going on with the Illinois Public Funding Commission looking at equitable funding for higher ed. So this work has been going on, I believe, for a year now. Sometimes it seems like 10 years, but I think it's only been a year. And I've updated the group before. This is a commission that, through the effort of the full commission and its three work groups, has been trying to create a funding formula to distribute the funds that are given to higher ed in an equitable fashion, considering things like enrollment, mission, and the type of students served, recognizing that universities like ours that serve large populations of first-generation students and students from low socioeconomic backgrounds have to invest in services to help those students get to and through the university. The report from the commission actually should have been issued by now. Part of the reason things have been slow is because it's fairly innovative to try to do an adequacy-based formula that models K-12, because higher ed and K-12 have some obvious differences I don't think I need to focus on with this group. But also because as the work was moving forward, the Supreme Court handed down the decision, forbidding the use of race in admissions. And certainly there are a lot of people who believe that there'll be subsequent challenges related to race in any kind of scholarship or aid. And the commission, the state of Illinois, the governor, and certainly the leadership at this university are completely committed to closing equity gaps and to making sure that all of our students have what they need to succeed. But I think very sensibly, the work of this commission is trying to be proactive in hearing from legal experts so they don't frame an adequacy-based formula in terms that will attract like a lightning rod, a legal challenge, tie things up in the courts and prevent the funding from being released. And as someone who remembers what it's like not to have state funding, I'm all for not having that happen. So the next public funding commission meeting will actually have legal experts talking about this issue. I think some of you may remember that when we had COVID relief funds that were distributed from the IBAG, they used the percentage of Pell students that a university served to influence the amount of funds that were directed to the students. And NIU did quite well under that formula. So I'm optimistic that good things will come from this commission, but the formula being released is the first step in then adoption into legislation. And so I think we'll see if there's going to be a move to use something simpler for equitable funding in this coming session. Certainly we will continue to advocate to make sure we get what the university and our students need. But I don't think, you know, I'm stealing the thunder from George and Lori's presentation to tell you that the state will not solve all our problems. So stay tuned for that presentation, and I'll stop there. And before I turn the gavel over to Ben, does anybody have any questions about what's going on campus or anything else? All right, don't forget all the cool homecoming things that are coming. Dr. Streff has been focused on the weather app for the past 72 hours. He is in constant contact with our, this is so serious, this, I'm not making this up. He's been in constant contact with our meteorology faculty who look at two weather models per day to look at changes in storm patterns. And what we believe will happen now is that there may be a break in the clouds from the storms that start tonight for the downtown DeKalb events tomorrow. And we'll all be very, very excited about that. Probably Friday and Saturday are going to have inclement weather, but a lot of things have moved inside. Anyone who was planning to go to John and Mac for the local foods and spirits events, it's moving inside to the Cider House, so there will not be a tent. We will not be blown away. And, you know, we can't move the football game inside, but there'll still be a lot of really fun things to do for homecoming. And, you know, what I always say when I go outside and get wet in the rain is at least it proves I'm not a witch, right? So there's something to do. All right. So, all right. Thank you, Linda. I know I can always count on you. It was even funnier when I said that in Kansas when I worked there. So. I'm going to pass the gavel and the agenda over to Ben so he can introduce the next two presentations.
Thank you, President Freeman. That brings us to item 7, which are items for University Council consideration. We have two presentations today. The first is an update and overview related to technology accessibility here at NIU. And Katie Whitelaw, who serves as NIU's Information Technology Accessibility Officer, will give this presentation and answer questions afterwards. While the presentation focuses on relevant and important laws, definitions of NIU efforts, it's worth noting that President Freeman has charged a group called the Digital Accessibility Task Force, which Katie is a member of, with helping move the campus forward from an accessibility first perspective. It's wonderful.
And if I can just add to that one real quickly, I charged the group, but the group was an idea that came from Holly Nicholson. who felt that shared leadership was a good way to solve problems, and I wanted to make sure she got recognized for that. Slight adjustment here. Yeah, thank you.
You're welcome.
I am Katie Whitelaw, and I'm NIU's Information Technology Accessibility Officer. My position is in the Ethics and Compliance Office. And you can find basic information about technology accessibility at go.niu.edu/technology-accessibility. The technology I'll be talking about is referred to as Electronic and Information Technology, or EIT. There are four main categories: digital content, software, hardware, and the support documentation and services for them. There are laws and a policy that apply to NIU's EIT, or Electronic and Information Technology. The federal law is the Rehabilitation Act, Section 508, Refresh, which became law in January 2018. We also have an Illinois law, the Illinois Information Technology Accessibility Act 2.0, which is closely aligned with the federal law, and it also became law in January 2018. NIU has its own accessible electronic and information technology based on the federal and Illinois laws. The law says that technology is accessible when a person with disabilities is able to use it independently to acquire the same information, engage in the same interactions, and enjoy the same services in the same time frame as a person without disabilities. So you can imagine at NIU, this applies to things like course materials, course applications, registering for classes, paying for classes, getting your grades, using a one card, applying for a scholarship. The law says that it applies to people who are blind or visually impaired, deaf or hard of hearing, can't use a mouse or can't use a keyboard, or who use a wheelchair. There are exceptions to accessibility requirements. There might not be an accessible choice. The industry standard or product must be used. The accessible choice is far more expensive, and here there is no dollar amount. It's up to the buyer's discretion. It may be for a small known group of people who don't have a disability that would prevent them from using the technology, or it may not be public-facing. Measuring accessibility is kind of messy. The legally accepted way to measure accessibility is the Voluntary Product Accessibility Template, or VPAT. This is completed by the vendor. More and more vendors are putting these on their websites, but if I have to ask for one, I almost always get one right away. It's important to note that vendors do not have to produce accessible technology, and their VPATs can show there are accessibility problems, but we have to choose accessible technology whenever we can. So very briefly, this VPAT is tabled. It has three columns. The first column is each criteria of the law. The second column is whether the product supports, partially supports, or does not support the criteria. And the third column is for comments or maybe a timeline to compliance. When I get a VPAT, I send it to the purchaser, and I know what accessibility issues are shown in the VPAT and how they might affect people with disabilities. Here's a really great technology. It's called Blackboard Ally. It's an addition to Blackboard, and it's available to all students, faculty, and staff. To use it, log into Blackboard, scroll down to Assist, then scroll down to Blackboard Ally. Upload a file and choose a format. Here are some of the formats you can choose. HTML will display very nicely on your phone or small device. EPUB lets you choose the text font, the background color, and lets you make notes on the document. You could have it translated into your primary language. You can get an audio file so you can hear the content. You can even get electronic braille. You may have noticed QR codes like this on Canvas. NIU is installing a wayfinding system, which was developed for people who are blind and visually impaired. Unlike the black and white QR codes, these codes, you don't have to focus on them. You don't have to know exactly where they are. This is detected by your phone using a free app. Scan your surroundings with your phone. I brought my phone, so this is how I've seen people use it, just like this. And when your phone detects a QR code, it'll give a little buzz and it'll display and announce the information in the code. The directions to and the distance from the QR code are also displayed and announced in the language of your phone. There are universal design aspects to this wayfinding system. It was created for people who are blind or visually impaired, but is useful for deaf and hard of hearing people who may have trouble asking for directions from a hearing person. It's easy for non-native English speakers to use because it uses the language of their phone. And it's nice for anyone who's unfamiliar with one of our buildings. There are many benefits to NIU for having accessible technology. We can recruit students with disabilities, knowing that they will be successful here, and retain them all the way to graduation. When these students are successful here, we build a reputation for having an accessible campus and an accessible education. We also reduce our risk of litigation for being out of compliance with accessibility law. Going forward, let's make NIU a center of excellence for accessibility. There's more information at this website. And do you have any questions now? Yes.
So thank you for the information about the Blackboard Ally. Are there ways that we can help support your area with getting, I mean, I think the way you described it is fantastic, and it's such an, you know, it offers universal design for so many folks around the access, and that piece is so important. I know that the provost's office, not to put you on the spot, but you do a newsletter to your faculty colleagues and your partnership. I do information to student affairs. Are there things and ways, or do you have snippets of information about Blackboard Ally that we could push out and help promote to increase students' awareness of it, to increase different groups, our faculty, things like that? Because I think it sounds like such a great accessible tool that maybe folks just might not fully understand is there.
Yes. This Blackboard Ally format is a page on the Blackboard site that lists all of the possible formats and all of the advantages to each one. So that link will be clickable when you get the presentation.
I just would also add with that, I know I was curious, I went on the CITL's website and they have resources there too that can walk you through how to use it as well.
That's true, yeah.
Share that out as well.
Yeah.
Wanted to add that.
Anything else? Thank you.
Thank you so much for that. The next presentation we have is the Mental Health Early Action on Campus Act Update. And this will be a joint presentation by Kim Paquette, who's the Director of Counseling and Consultative Services, and Kelly Olson, who is Associate Vice Provost for Student Development and Dean of Students.
Good afternoon, everyone. I am Tim Paquette, CCS Director.
And I'm Kelly Olson. I serve as our Assistant Vice President for Student Affairs and our Dean of Students. Thanks for having us.
I'd like to apologize in advance for anyone who was attending the Faculty Senate meeting last Wednesday. This is the same presentation that we are going to cover with the same points. But please feel free to jump in as we go along. We thought it would be important to start with a quick overview of what MEHAC, as we've come to abbreviate it, at, what it actually is all about. So the Mental Health Early Action on Campus Act was actually started in the Illinois legislature in 2019, connected to how can the state of Illinois, especially public universities and all two-year community colleges, fill the gaps around mental health. Gaps that might not always be about funding, although sometimes it is, but about how can there be increased awareness, training, and education around mental health services on campuses. And it really focuses on a few main areas that really, more than anything, highlights peer-to-peer support is one of those ways to do that. And so what we've been tasked with over time is to be able to talk about the implementation of MEHAC here at NIU, not just through CCS, but through out campus around ways to prioritize ways to meet the requirements. I can talk, it's been a long day. In March of 2023, we received our first funding. Kelly, I think you're
going to
talk more about that.
So I think as all of us have experienced in some ways, this act was really unfunded, an unfunded mandate from the state for several years. And so it challenged us because it did open our mindset to how we look at resources. But to be honest, we didn't have additional financial resources to support efforts. And so we actually have been reporting on our work towards the act since 2019. And in that, we've been doing regular requests, budgetary requests of what would it look like if this was funded? And what would our budget look like? And so as much as we are very grateful for funding from the state, I think it's important to note that when we first initially started this, our budget that we really proposed was closer to about $400,000. To really look at new and innovative ways and how to bring this to campus and really expand. Now as I said, we're incredibly grateful for the funding we had. As you can see, it's increased this year, which is exciting, but that's really over the course of the whole fiscal year. So we're going to talk about how we're using that budget, but I think that's just an important perspective for you to understand about the resources this takes to do this type of work.
We also wanted to highlight some updates about what we have been able to implement. As Kelly said, even before we received funding, but certainly the impact that funding has had over the last 6 months or so, and even maybe a little bit before that, what we really wanted to highlight is the expansion of our peer education program through CCS Student Wellness. So for those who don't know, Counseling and Consultation Services also includes our Student Wellness team. And in our student wellness team, we have administrative leadership and three GA positions, as well as peer educators. Previously, those peer educator positions were always volunteer. And I don't think it'll shock anyone to know that the volunteer could volunteer numbers could ebb and flow. Sometimes people would commit to becoming peer educators and then need to drop out. Well, guess what? Once we made them paid peer educator positions, we had quite a few students who were willing to not just commit their time, but their energy and effort to be able to expand on our peer-to-peer education efforts. We had 15 peer educators at the end of last spring semester. Some of those graduated, others had other time commitments, but as we come into this fall semester, we now have expanded those 3 GA positions and have 10 peer educators who have all gone through certified peer education training, and we're doing all kinds of different peer-to-peer support around not just mental health, but holistic health and well-being. The other thing that we were able to implement, and this was with the support and encouragement of Dr. Ingram, was to begin the process of becoming a JED campus. The JED Foundation, is a national organization that works primarily with colleges and universities to promote suicide awareness and prevention. JED was developed as a non-for-profit for a family who lost their son to suicide when he was attending college, and is now a nationally recognized leader in college mental health and prevention efforts. We have been able to take steps to enter into a 3-year consultation agreement with JED to be able to become a JED campus. What that means is we partner with JED to provide them information about our resources on campus, what we currently provide. They also are using their assessment model to look for gaps in what we do provide so that we can focus in on resources, training, education, awareness around mental health that also helps us meet the requirements of rehab. And so it really is an exciting partnership, and we are now taking next steps in that partnership where we will have a first site visit from our JED consultant in December. That will include a summary report of a healthy mind survey that over 450 students completed in the spring semester, and our own university self-assessment that we provided around mental health and well-being services that we currently do or do not provide. And that will be part of the next steps towards strategic planning and implementation of what we will start with when it comes to JED on our campus. But that will continue over the next few years. Sure.
So one of the things we've also done is, so as the act states, it's about mental health early action. And so what we know is that it's important for us to talk with our students immediately. And so we've continued partnerships with orientation, first year programs, to how do we infuse the narrative around mental health support so that our students understand that the minute they step on campus. And so that is really part of MEHAC, and that's been a partnership we've had for a number of years. But again, I think the benefit of this type of work is it just brings you to a more centralized kind of goal. And so we have continued that partnership, and we've expanded that to include students, but also their families. So that their families understand that when their students struggling, sometimes their families also, as we know, we have a large population of first generation, they don't know where to start. And so our goal has really been to partner together in the orientation process so that our families and our students are prepared to know how we can support them, where can they go. And so that's a continued important partnership. Sure. We've also continued to partner with our residential and residential life and housing staff. Part of MEHAC, one of the requirements is to increase training and specifically mental health first aid training with our housing staff. Because what we know is that we become their home away from home. So as we entered the academic year of about 4,200 students living with us, it was important for us to know that our housing staff are on those front lines with those students. And so how do we prepare them? How do we train them and make that at all levels within housing? So one of our partnerships has been to look at everywhere from our community advisors. So those are our undergraduate students. They're also known as CAs. So if you hear the CA term from students, that's who live on their floors with them, talk with them regularly, all the way through our professional staff. So that all lines has the same training, and so that we're equally looking at our response for mental health. The other big partnership for us on campus is employee well-being. And so we've continued, and several of you have been wonderful partners in this, where we have expanded this beyond just student affairs, but into really our academic affairs units and looking at our student in a holistic lens. And so partnering with colleges, with academic advisors who are on the front lines with our students, who oftentimes are hearing the stories of what's happening with our students. And so that we can make sure that those resources are shown and shared, and that we know who to contact so folks know. And so that's been a wonderful partnership. And that's led primarily out of counseling and consultation services through the consultation part of their unit. But it's definitely also part of MEHAC. So again, a lot of things that we've been doing on campus are continuing, but it's having that lens that it's a common goal of the early action.
And I would just say as well, to add to that, is that we have also already been working with faculty around mental health first aid. The exciting thing about our GED partnership is that that will assist with that as well. As we continue to identify ways to best use the GED campus resources, really can see that as a clear connection about how we continue to provide faculty more around that mental health first aid training, about how are you responding in the classroom, how are you responding to student concerns around mental health or well-being, and that partnership will continue to expand. So something we're proud about, something to highlight that also I think can serve as a model about ways to expand services, which is also part of the MEHAC requirements. How are you trying to come up with creative ways to expand mental health services and supports for students? But we were able to partner with Athletics to create an embedded counselor position, started initially just a few hours a week, then it went to a few days a week. And then this year, with the strong support of Athletics providing funding to have Dr. Cheyenne Beach, our staff psychologist, be there 5 days a week as a full-time embedded psychologist. That salary savings then allowed us at CCS to be able to search and successfully fill two staff counselor positions back at CCS. If you were in our presentation last week, we provided the plug to say, please feel free to go back to your departments and say, hey, maybe there's something to this embedded counselor process. But in all seriousness, this could be a way to expand this kind of model. It's not unique to NIU, but it is a really nice way to say we can bring mental health staff to different spaces on campus, and through partnership also be able to expand services at the same time. And we're looking forward to being able to do that. We've also been able to expand our existing Compassionate Edge agreement. That's something that goes back to the heart of the pandemic, when President Freeman and Dr. Ingram provided emergency funding for us to contract with Compassionate Edge to provide an opportunity for students who really do have a strong preference to meet with a counselor of color to be able to have that opportunity. And we've been able to continue to utilize that a resource when students have that preference. We continue to be able to fund that, another way that we've been able to expand our services. Money really helps, it does. So money has allowed us, the funding from the state, to also move forward with a Together All contract. This is a service that is all about 24/7 peer-to-peer support online. It's a platform that allows students to be able to access support anytime from other trained peers who are supervised then by licensed mental health therapists above them, to be able to monitor chats, online resources, discussions about concerns and ways to cope and manage. We're going to be able to be implementing Together All with a contract that we've entered into that will be actually being launched within the next few weeks as we start this new academic year. And so that is also happening on that peer-to-peer support side. Together All also will be providing additional mental health focused training for our peer educators. So an exciting part of this partnership is that not just the platforms are provided to students, but the training for peer educators is happening as well, to be able to expand our peer-to-peer mental health support, one-on-one support that we're going to be piloting this spring. Another mental health early action requirement that can be hard to think about how you implement it, but we think this can be a really helpful way to do that peer-to-peer support.
And then we are excited because, as several of you may know, we have a new presidential commission on campus, the Presidential Commission on Wellbeing. And so that really aligns with MEHAC and having the mindset of looking at wellbeing campus-wide. And so that's really kind of that systems level. That's going to be a lot of our partnerships. Some of that will come directly from counseling consultation. It'll come from student affairs. But that's really that when we look at the act, what it's really saying is how do we holistically provide for our students, but also our campuses. So we're excited because we're already ahead of the game in that way than what some other campuses are at, is because we have our new presidential commission. So that's exciting. I think as we really, Tim mentioned this earlier, but when we looked at this act, it really did help us focus on how do we look at student support peer to peer, because what we know is our students do value that. We've had a lot of success through peer coaching out of the Center for Student Assistance and some of the other academic units on campus, and we've seen a lot of support through our peer educators that we talked about that's specific to MEHAC. But a couple of examples that I wanted to just share, because some of you may know these happened, but this year we hosted a wellness concert, part of Week of Welcome. And I think when you say wellness concert, are you like, are students going to go to this? Like, what does this mean? And I'll tell you, we engaged over 300 students with just mindfulness activities. And there was a concert happening. They were doing crafts. They were engaging with our peer educators. And that really launched us in a really positive way starting this fall semester, because right away we connected them with our peer educators, and we've seen that growth continue throughout the semester. Last week, several of you may have also seen our campaign of Send Silence Packing. And that really connects a lot to our what Judd will be providing us too, as we look at suicide prevention and suicide awareness. And so that was a really exciting opportunity as well. We had a lot of engagement come through that from our peer educators and our students. There was a wall of hope that was coordinated, and students and faculty and staff even wrote messages on that. I think, again, that's looking at this holistically, that it's not just therapy. It's not just counseling in a one-on-one setting, but it's the interactions we have and the intention we have about who we're putting in those spaces with our students. So just a couple of examples I wanted to share, because it's been a great fall semester. We're excited where we're going to go.
Thank you.
Yeah, thanks.
Questions? Thank you very much.
Thank you for that. Moving on to item number 8, new business. There's one item, which is a vote on approving Professor Stephen Howell to serve on the 2023-24 University Fee Advisory Committee. Can I have a motion to approve Professor Howell to serve on this group? Second from Pitney. We're going to use a voice vote for this. So all in favor, say aye. All opposed? All right, guys, have it. Thank you, Steve, for serving in this capacity. Moving on to unfinished business, we have the proposed amendment to NIU bylaws, Article 8, to remove Article 8.3, which is the Campus Security and Environmental Quality Committee. Before I turn it over to Scott for his reading, I'd like to take a motion in a second, and then we'll invite Scott to present on the reading and engage in any discussion. But following that, we'll have a vote having you through. So can I please have a motion? Consider the amendment. Pitney, a second. Thank you. And with that, I will turn it over to Scott to walk us through the reading.
All right, thank you. So the reading, as I mentioned last month in the September meeting, was as follows. The Campus Security and Environmental Quality Committee met on April 19th, 2023, and unanimously voted to dissolve the committee. The proposal comes with the support of Chief Mitchell from the NIU Police Department and John Heckman, Associate Vice President for Facilities Management and Campus Services. Both of which have historically had a vested interest in the committee. Currently, Police and Public Safety, Facilities Management, Campus Services, in my department, Environmental Health and Safety, all have mechanisms and workflows in place to respond to the needs of the university community without the assistance of the committee. This appears to be evident as the committee has entertained few requests for assistance from the university community in recent years, in accordance with the scope of the committee bylaws. Furthermore, there is optimism that the spirit of the committee bylaws will be incorporated into existing related student-centric committees and/or emerging committees, including but not limited to environmental sustainability and the Presidential Commission on Well-Being. So with that, I'm happy to entertain any questions.
All right, seeing no questions or comments, we'll move to a vote. And Pat, could you help? Please help us lead us through that.
Okay, so the first step is just to clarify. The slide, shows everybody who is a voting member. So if you see your name on that slide, or if you're here today for someone whose name is on that slide, we need you to pick up a clicker by the door there. While we're doing that, I want to remind you that there's no need to turn the clickers on or off. They activate automatically when you vote, and they deactivate after several seconds of non-use. So for our vote today, I'll let you know when the software is ready. So wait for my cue before you press any of the buttons. And when we're ready, we'll tell you to vote or to press 1 or A for yes, 2 or B for no, 3 or C for abstain. Clicking 3 to abstain means that you are present, but you're choosing not to vote. So clicking 3 will have no impact on the total vote calculation. For today's proposal to amend the bylaws, we're reminded that the proposal must be approved by a vote of 2/3 of those voting, provided at least 2/3 of our voting members are present. I do confirm that 2/3 of our voting membership is present. And so now give me a minute and I'm going to open this poll. And remember that 1 or A is yes, you agree with the motion. 2 or B is no, you do not agree. 3 or C is abstain, which means that you're present, but not choosing not to vote, and it will have no impact on the vote. So go, you can go ahead and do that. If you press a button and then you change your mind, just press a different button. It will automatically paste your old vote and put your new one in. You can only vote once. One clicker per person. A yes, you get a check mark or a smiley face on your clicker if your vote was received. If you're having trouble with your clicker at all, just raise your hand and we'll help you out. Okay, so that clearly passes.
No math.
All right, great. That brings us to item 10, which are the reports from councils, boards, and standing committees. Our first report is from Linda Saverio on the Faculty Advisory Council to the IBHE.
Good afternoon. I just have a few highlights from our September 15th meeting down at IVCC. We did have the opportunity to speak with Illinois State Rep Lance Yennick at our meeting. It was a great conversation. A lot of our working groups were able to share with him many of the ideas and the research that they're working on, such as prior learning assessment. In particular, they were hoping to, they shared with him this idea they have of there being a statewide, almost like parallel to the IAI, kind of a statewide committee that really looks at prior learning assessment and how institutions are assessing prior learning. Let's see what else. There was also a conversation about early college credit, and we reminded him of the white paper that that group produced and asked if he had any questions about it, or if there were issues that came up regarding dual credit or early college credit, you know, that you could definitely reach out to our group for verification. And then we also talked a little bit about college affordability. Yeah, and this idea how there's a middle class that tends to be left out of financial aid opportunities, perhaps because their income threshold falls above the minimum or the maximum amount allowed for financial aid. Yet the middle class, what do you call it, referred to as a donut hole, right? They don't make enough really to support one, two, or sometimes more children through college. That was a great discussion that we had with Lance. And then we had two presentations by Stephanie Bernatet from IPHE, who was retiring. She announced it at our meeting. I did not know that she was retiring. You know, it's going to be a big loss for our group because Stephanie, she attended a lot of our meetings and really kept us connected with the IPHE. So the first one, and I have these slides if anybody's interested. Like I said, Faculty Senate, I'd be happy to share them with you, and I'm sure Stephanie would not mind. The first one is about the Illinois Articulation Initiative at 30. She looked at some of the background on the IAI, showed us a lot of data on what appears to be a very robust statewide participation in the IAI, and then provided us with a couple of updates to the IAI Act. Two in particular, one has to do with the transfer of major courses, which I'm sure you all know more about this than I do, and the second one with oversight. They added a new group on early childhood education for the IAI Act. Her second presentation was on higher education paths to equity, sustainability, and growth, where she focused on this idea of closing equity gaps for students who have been left behind, and again, shared some ideas there in terms of grant opportunities, for example, to end student housing insecurity, opportunities for nursing students, increasing our nursing students, early childhood education, and the Mental Health Early Action Act, which we are going to discuss about today. That is really all I wanted to share with you. It was our first meeting of the year, so we did spend a good deal of time, a good amount of time talking with our new members, getting to know them a little bit, and about some initiatives at their campuses and their research. Our next meeting is October 20th, so next Friday I'll be down at Illinois State University. Are there any questions? I passed because it appears as if the Faculty Senate President at ISU has decided to convene. She invited all the other, I don't know if that was just from the public institutions, the Faculty Senate Presidents to join her at ISU. And so we're going to be meeting with them in the morning. I think she had eight that said they would be coming. Pretty good group. We're all fighting for hotel rooms at the moment because there's a big convention down there as well. So, yeah.
I just had a question. I noticed you submitted a question to us about college specific requirements for graduation. Is there any way that you'd like us to share that with you, or
do you have an idea? Please go ahead. I'm sure.
I know I'm happy to push something out and ask for a collection of those.
So is there something that you're aware of that in the College of Education is that?
No, I'm just asking if you would like
email me. Yeah. Or someone like a
no.
Do you have something that, because I'm kind of it's just a curiosity from one of my colleagues in the FAC.
You know, university wide, we have a requirement for a writing intensive course and for the human diversity requirement. Beyond that, we would have to get data from individual colleges and or programs if they have additional things that are not normal curricular requirements. So we would have to gather that, and that could be done either by contacting the colleges or just by going into the catalog, because those graduation requirements are all codified in the catalog.
Chair, next report. University Advisory Committee to the Board of Trustees. The Board of Trustees met on September 21st, and there were a few items I want to highlight. The first, I want to continue encouraging members the university council to read or skim the board of trustees public notice and reports as they're made available. And spending just a few minutes to do that will help you understand and help provide more information about what's going on campus and within the broader context of the state. Sometimes several months before, it may trickle down and impact you directly, but it gives you that heads up, and then you may be able to join virtually to learn more directly. During the Board of Trustees meeting, they approved two collective bargaining agreements, one with Local 150 and one with Local 790. And then they also heard commentary and public comments from Local 1890 as they're in the negotiation process for their contract. The Board of Trustees approved a request to work with REUP to re-enroll former NIU students who were last enrolled more than a year ago. And this is an organization that will work to identify eligible students, reach out to them on NIU's behalf, and then provide supports to those students with non-academic issues if they choose to re-enroll. And it's a way to bring students back into our university to help them achieve their goals. The Board of Trustees also heard updates from the graduate school and engaged in a conversation about the various efforts in community colleges, including transfer enrollments, the partnerships that NIU is engaged with, and the strategies NIU is currently taking to be a more transfer-friendly institution. And that's the summary of the I don't know if there's any additions from those that are. All right, for item C, Rules, Governance, Elections Committee, there's no report. Item D is Student Government Association. I think we have a report from Cole. Thank you.
So since the last time we met, the SGA has met four times. So far through our budget, we have spent roughly half on supplemental funding. At the end of this week, I think we're going to spend roughly two-thirds. Our executive funding is about half of what it is. The SGA Senate still has some open seats, and Olivia Newman is still filling her cabinet. Besides that, we are planning events for later this semester and next semester, and trying to plan some events for next fall in advance. And that's all I have.
Thank you, Cole. Are there any questions? Thank you so much. We appreciate them. And sharing. Next up is our reports from Operating Staff Council. Natasha?
Hi, everybody. So first, we wanted to congratulate President Freeman on being named among the top 50 women and leaders in education. So congratulations on that. Then for OSC, we are taking a deeper dive through our priority survey. So we sent out a survey to gather what civil service employees, what matters most to them right now, so we can advocate in those areas. So to begin, the first one was internal equity gap / salary compression. Then the second highest was enrollment / recruitment. And then the third one was desk audit. So we're going to take a deeper dive into those three to kind of figure out what we can do for measurables and what we can do to support the civil service employees. So that's pretty much what we'll be working on in the next few months.
Thank you.
Thank you, Natasha. And I did not see Felicia. Is there somebody else giving a presentation on behalf or a report from Support Professional Staff Council? Not seeing anybody racing to the microphone, I'll assume no. All right, so on to item 11, which are informational items. You can look through these if they interest you, but I'd like to again draw your attention to the last four items, Q through T. Q is just the upcoming dates for University Council. Item R are the annual reports. Item S is the last time you'll see this, but it's the call for honorary doctoral degree nominations. And materials must be submitted by the end of this month, October 27th. And the final thing I want to bring attention to is item T, which is the updated 2024 university holiday schedule. We've received clarification from Human Resource Services, General Counsel, and the Director of State Relations that we do not get the general election day off. So as such, the Faculty Senate will amend those calendars that have already been approved at our next Faculty Senate meeting. Those will be reflected going forward. And that's all we have for informational items, which brings us to item 12, adjournment. I have a motion to adjourn. Johnson, second Pitney, all in favor?